We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Josh Pates mentioned last year from Itaminami and again last week that teams should scrimmage an FCS team for spring game and pay them. He thinks it can be good for all parties. What do you think?
I understand it from his point of view. I think his argument for that makes a ton of sense. Ryan, I don't like it because I always worry about playing an inferior opponent like that in that type of setting. I always feel like there's a greater risk of injury just because, like, you're playing guys that aren't used to moving at your speed and aren't used to doing those type of things. I don't know how much they're out, especially on the portal era. Hey, I'm gonna go try to lay out some Notre Dame kid, get noticed, and then jump in the spring portal and go play and go transfer somewhere else. You know, I don't practically speaking, I don't like the idea. I understand Josh's argument. I'm very sympathetic to Josh's argument. I just, looking at it from a coach, I'm not exposing my team to the risk of injury in that situation. And here's the other part of it too, Ryan. In most instances, I'm going to get more out of the spring practice going against my own defense than I am going to be going against some FCS team in most instances.
Sure.
I just am. Now, I have said, Ryan, is what I would like to do is see something in the spring where there's more of a uniform spring schedule in college football, and that you can have a week of crossover practices against, you can have three crossover practices where you can have Notre Dame and have Purdue come into town, like NFL teams do for mini camps.
Well, NFL teams like that more than playing preseason games. They like the joint practice thing.
Yeah, that's something I would like to see. I think would make a lot of sense. And so those type of things, it would make more sense. But again, I wouldn't want to do it against an FCS opponent for some reasons that I mentioned. But for Purdue, for teams like that. But here's the sad thing is you know who's going to be against that? Those smaller schools, those Purdue's, and because they're like, look, we go practice for 3 days, and this my D tackle, is kicking your offensive lineman's butt, and miraculously he's jumping in the portal a week later and going to your school. You know what I mean? Like that would be my fear about it. But I think that would be a lot more beneficial to these kids and these teams and stuff like that than a scrimmage against Purdue. Like, you know what I mean? To your point about the NFL and the preseason, like, I wouldn't want the blue gold game to be against Purdue or Indiana or somebody like that. I'd want it to be against it's the reward for your spring practice. But I do like the notion of having like three, practices, maybe you can even do it after the spring game or maybe the middle of spring, where you just got this week period where everybody's kind of playing some sort of crossover type of practicing situation with a, you know, and I would even set it to where like you can't play anyone outside of this many miles away from your campus. Right. I mean,
so it's like a pro day. You can't go to this.
Yeah. Kind of
out of this sector.
Yeah. Now there have to be exceptions because some teams aren't, there's nobody close enough to us. Nebraska would need a, probably need an exception for playing somebody, you know, something like that. But you know, and look, you can play an FCS team if you want. I wouldn't if I was Notre Dame. It would make a lot more sense for Indiana to go against Indiana State in a practice like that than maybe it would for them to go to Notre Dame in year one of Kurt Cignetti's tenure. You know what I mean? Like, get my guys, get their heads knocked around for a week. So that, you know, or if you're Minnesota, hey, look, man, we'd love to be able to have a week going against North Dakota State's kids and coaches. Be good for us. So for some FCS, it would make sense. For Notre Dame, I don't know that it would make a ton of sense for them.
That's why I would leave it open to the teams. Like, if they want to do that, leave them, give them the option to do it. Because I think that there's going to be a lot of teams that it's just not that beneficial for. I mean, like in your situation where you're talking about, like, let's say Notre Dame invites, we'll just use Duquesne because we mentioned Duquesne earlier, right? Like they schedule Duquesne for a scrimmage, whatever.
I'd be so pissed. Yeah, like, you couldn't have done that when I was coaching at Duquesne.
Right. Well, I just don't think that Notre Dame gets like a ton out of that, right? I mean, so Duquesne gets the money. Awesome. They also get to play really good competition. So like, that's a good test, right? I mean, like, that's great for them. But for Notre Dame, to your point, they're playing against their second stringers, which all due respect are more talented than what Duquesne has as their starters. I mean, it just is what it is, right? But if a lower level power five that's maybe in a transitional period, you said Indiana, Kurt Cignetti, right? If Kurt Cignetti wanted to go play an FCS team, give him the right to, right? Like, he has the option there. So I think having the option open there, and if a team chooses that they want to take advantage of that, let them take advantage of it.
Now, I'll say this. So when I was at Duquesne, for example, we had a receiving core that we could have got a lot out of playing Notre Dame, you know, back then, you know, because I had one of my kids ran a 4.4 and was signed by the Eagles. You might actually, I don't know if you remember, Yarden Brantley. He actually got invited to camp by the Eagles. I had another kid that got invited to camp with the Bengals, played in the World Football League, kid named Michael Warfield. You know, so like and even when I was at a D3 school like Christopher Newport, we had athletes that we could, in a 7-on-7 setting, we could get something out of it playing against them.
Right.
But I don't know that like Notre Dame would get as much out of playing my guys as my guys got out of playing Notre Dame. But when you get into line play, that's where it's just, this is useless. Like, Notre Dame's getting nothing out of it, right? 7-on-7, 1-on-1s, my guys could give them some work when I was at Duquesne. But D-line versus D-line, they're getting nothing out of it. Oh, you know, that would be different.
So my mind wandered. I remember this past year, we were talking about FCS versus Power 5 teams, right? Didn't Sac State just beat Stanford this year, right? Yeah. Like, didn't that happen?
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
So if Stanford this spring said, you know what, our coach used to coach at Sac State, he has a good relationship with them still, let's schedule Sac State to get a nice little live scrimmage going, I'm fine with them having that option if they choose to take it. I just don't want to force a team to do that option if they don't feel like it's beneficial for their program. That's kind of where I'm at with that.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious cash. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. We are the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You heard it. 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It is so easy to use. All you have to do is download the app in the App Store or Google Play Store, sign up, add some funds, and you're in. Then you just find your favorite player and decide more or less on the suggested stat. It really is that easy. The night I joined, I picked Hannah Hidalgo to have more than 14 points, Maddie Westbeld to have less than 10 rebounds, and Marcus Burton to have more than 18 points. And guess what? I hit on all three. Bing, bang, boom, baby. Money in my pocket. It was just that easy. Download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Anthony Proger said, Ryan, was Lee Bodden at Duquesne during your time there? No, he finished up his career the year before I got there. I believe his
Lee
last
Bodden
year.
Was a Duquesne guy?
Yeah, no, he played at Duquesne. Yeah, he was there, I believe, the year before I got there.
That's the corner that played with the Browns, right? And that's Lee Bodden?
Yes, yeah. Correct. Yeah. And I think he was with the Patriots for a minute as well.
Yeah.
But yes, he was at Duquesne the year before I got there. But I knew of Lee. Obviously, they talked a lot about him. They had a receiver the year before that was really, really good as well. And that left, the year before I got there as well. But no, Lee Bodden was not. I mean, that was obviously something that they brought up in the interview process with me to try to show, like, hey, we're. But he was not
Lee Bodden. I haven't heard that name in a while.
Good size Coleman's corner too, Ryan. He was not a small guy. Like he was
like 6'1", right?
Wasn't he was like 6'1". Kid. Yeah.
Coleman Smith, who do you think would be most dynamic running the slot fade concept you went over? I just have the vision of Chris Mitchell to the field and Jaden Greathouse in the slot burning people all year.
I mean, Ryan, it would be different people. And, look, that's the whole thing that LSU did a great job of with Mike Denbrock. It wasn't always Malik Nabers. It wasn't always Brian Thomas. It was not always either one of them. I mean, we saw Kyron Lacy catch some of those as well. Like, they all played it in different looks. That's what's great about Denbrock is like, hey, every time we put Malik Nabers in the slot, he's running a wide. No, it wasn't that at all. I mean, they would really mix it up and it would depend on the matchup. Cause sometimes like I want you to think that my, number one guy is getting the ball. Cause then that's going to get me in a better matchup with my, cause I think my number three guy can smoke your number three guy, you know, because again, Notre Dame's number three, meaning the slot, I think this year could very well be their best receiver. And Jaden Greathouse.
Sure.
But there's going to be some matchups where maybe it's better to have Chris Mitchell running that matchup because I want more
depending
speed.
Depending who's
there.
Covering him.
Exactly. Right. I want more speed there. It may be times where I may want Bo Collins there because they've got Jordan Clark at nickel. So if I'm Notre Dame and I'm playing my defense and I'm trying to hit a slot fade, I may want Deion Colsey there or Bo Collins there. Because I want that size matchup at the 25-yard line against Jordan Clark than I do the speed matchup. And so that's the beauty of it, Ryan, is you don't have to have a guy. It won't always be Jaden Greathouse or Jordan Faison. I guarantee you I'll be shocked if we don't see Chris Mitchell run a slot fade this year. I'll be shocked if we don't see Bo Collins run a slot fade this year. I'll be shocked if we don't see Mitchell Evans or Cooper Flanagan or Eli Redden, one of those guys run a slot fade. And I'll be shocked if we don't see Jeremiah Love run a slot fade against somebody this year. Because if I know I'm going to get a linebacker matched up against Jeremiah Love in a 21 personnel look, if I think I might get that, I'm going to run that. Absolutely, I'm going to run that.
Sure.
So that's the beauty of it, Ryan, is you're going to get different matchup advantages in different situations. And that's going to determine who runs it. And but to your point, yeah, I think Jaden Greenhouse is going to be really good on that route because he's got the kind of ball skills, Ryan. We saw this in high school. He's got the kind of ball skills where even if you cover him, as long as the quarterback gives him a chance to go make that play, he's going to make that play.
Yep.
There's no doubt about it.
Yep. Use his physicality and his body control against a little bit of lesser size. And then if you get a – I mean, I'm thinking of like Notre Dame's, you know, true 4-2-5 set. Like if I saw Jalen Snead out there and against Chris Mitchell, like that would be a matchup I would like. You know, a little bit more speed out there to be able to take advantage of a bigger body type in the slot. Yep.
I feel like getting Ryan fired up, so I'm going to read this next question, Ryan. This is from Chris W. Ryan, would you take J.J. McCarthy in the top 10? I just don't get it.
I wouldn't, no. I've come to peace with J.J. McCarthy. J.J. McCarthy, to me, is a guy that if I got him in the second round or the third, well, if I got him in day two, just leave it at that, I'd be okay with it. I'd be okay with it because I do think that he has a requisite level of talent where he could develop into a good quarterback in the NFL. I think he has a good arm. I think he's a pretty good athlete. I just don't think he's a guy that's worthy of being the top 10 pick because that is going to put a lot of unrealistic expectations on J.J. McCarthy. And the other thing is that I think J.J. is kind of the eye of a couple teams that are trying to trade up potentially, right? And I think that especially when you're talking about putting even more draft capital other than just, you know, like let's say the Atlanta Falcons never traded Kirk Cousins and they dearly needed a quarterback at number 8. Like that's one thing taking a quarterback at 8, like a J.J. McCarthy, but there's another thing of a Denver Broncos trading multiple first round picks to try to get to get J.J. McCarthy. I mean, just
why,
an example,
why do you
right?
do things
I mean,
to hurt me, Ryan? I just don't understand.
They're desperate. They're a desperate team that needs a quarterback.
I will become a Houston Texans fan if they do that. I'm just telling you right now.
Houston Texans are going in a good direction.
That's
so
exactly right. My buddy was a lifelong Giants fan, and he just switched to the Texans this offseason. I'm telling you, if the Broncos trade up to draft a quarterback, there's only one quarterback I'd be okay with them trading up for, and I would still be pissed about that one. So,
I've made peace in J.J. McCarthy. I would be okay with the team investing a day two selection in him and trying to develop him and give him maybe a year red shirt and see what he is year two, year three. Top 10 pick, I don't see it either, especially right now. A guy that needs to play in 2024, I do not see that at all. I see a developmental quarterback that has upside, that has tools, but is not ready to be a quarterback on the NFL level. Anytime I ask a person that likes JJ, why do you like JJ? Tell me. He's a winner, bro.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I'm done with this conversation. Thank you so much for that. Here's funny. I interviewed AJ Barner recently, the tight end out of Michigan in the draft this year. And I asked him about JJ and he said, top two things I love about JJ. He's a winner. He's competitive. I'm like, all I need to hear, man. All I need to hear. Thank you so much. You're just finalizing my thoughts on JJ. Thank you so much.
Look, is drafting a winner important? Absolutely.
Sure.
But it can be somewhat. I mean, Patrick Mahomes, I believe, had at best a 500 record in college. I believe he actually had a sub 500 record in college. I believe. Yeah.
You know who also didn't win any big games in college? Josh Allen, who's arguably the second best quarterback in the NFL.
Right.
I mean, again, like quarterback wins is a stat, right? But there's a lot of context that is.
And that's my point. Like JJ McCarthy had a road win over a top 10 team this year. Mm-hmm. Looks great on a piece of paper, right? The kid threw zero passes in the second half of that game. And again, I like JJ McCarthy's talent, his potential. But he needs to be an old school first round pick, Ryan, meaning that he's not in the top 10 and some team with a 35 year old quarterback or a solid veteran that they can, you know, like win with for a year or two at quarterback where you can kind of, you know, Aaron Rodgers or Steve McNair him for a year or two and let him develop. But the problem is when you take him top 10, no one's going to wait for a kid in the top 10 to develop. He's going to be considered a bust.
Right.
And that's the problem. You know, like I'll say this. I still feel, and I could be completely wrong on this. It's a pure guess. If Jordan Love was a top 10 pick, I think he never would have made it to this season. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, they never would have had the patience to let him get to the point where he was ready at this point in time in the season. You know what I mean? So when Jordan Love leads a team to the playoffs in year what, three or four? Is this year four for him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Guess what?
Four, I think,
it would have been with another team.
Right.
Like that. That's my problem. Because the when you overdraft these kids, a lot of times the expectation is, well, You know, we need him to play right now. And I just, you know, I don't think that works. Like, if you're a team that is, you know, like, let's just say
the Las Vegas Raiders are a team that I would be like, okay, they have Gardner for a year. They can take him along slowly. Like, right. Fine.
Or let's say the Broncos never traded Russell Wilson and they were going to play out another year with him. And you didn't, you thought he might be a good leader for your young quarterback and you want to take him at 12. I don't love it, but I get it. You're playing for the future. You know you're not a Super Bowl team right now, but the reality is that right now you're taking that kid, and the expectation is he's going to have to play for you early. Right. And I just, you know, that's asking a lot. And the whole winner thing to me is just, it's so overplayed in the manner in which people look at it. Did J.J. McCarthy make some really clutch plays for Michigan in some big games last 2 years? Absolutely. But it's easier to do that when that's all they're asking you to do. Is right. Occasionally step up with some of those plays, right?
Right?
Whereas a guy like Drake May had to put that entire program on his shoulders the last 2 years. If he didn't play well, they had a hard time winning.
Caleb Williams, too.
Daniels, especially this past year with Jaden Daniels. You know, Caleb Williams goes from all world to pretty darn good, but not quite as good. And all of a sudden, USC goes from 11 wins to 7.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not a coincidence. He has an off game against Notre Dame. They get destroyed.
There's also I mean, historical data points, right? When you're scouting, obviously you always take those things into consideration. And I hate the winning thing because if you look like the winningest quarterbacks in college football histories and winningest percentages and all that stuff, not a lot of great NFL quarterbacks on that list, man. We're talking about like the Colt McCoys and the Kellen Moores and like those types of dudes. It's like, there's a huge difference between being a good situation and being a great college quarterback and being a guy that can be transcendent on the NFL level. Like, it's a very different conversation to have, man. Very different.
Well, Ryan, I think to your point, you know, you look at Lamar Jackson when he was in college. He was the starting quarterback from 15 to 17 in Louisville, right?
Mm-hmm.
They went 8-5, 9-4, 8-5. They finished in the top 25 once. Right. That's it. Has Lamar Jackson been a winner in the NFL? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right? Because he's part of a really good organization, which is something you need to be a part of to win in football. I don't care who you are. I mean, there were some years where John Elway was still a great talent, but the Broncos went 5-11, or got destroyed in a Super Bowl. Does anyone think Mark Rippon was a better quarterback than John Elway? Does anyone think Phil Simms was a better quarterback than John Elway? Maybe. I doubt it. Especially with Rippon, but guess what? He played on a much better team, right? That's what you need in the NFL. And right. Like I said, Patrick Mahomes, I believe he's around 500, maybe sub 500.
500 at best. 500.
Was he 17 real quick? Was he drafted in 17? Mahomes.
Who's that? Mahomes?
Yes.
17 or 18.
Because he was in the same class with Josh, with Deshaun Watson, correct?
Deshaun Watson.
His last year was 16. Okay, so real quick. The 3 years prior to him getting drafted, Texas Tech went 4-8, 7-6, 5-7.
Yep. And if he continues doing what he's doing for another 7 years, 6 or 7 years, he has an argument to be the best quarterback ever. I mean, like, we're in that
Hall of Famer right now. If Pat Mahomes walked away from the game right now, in my opinion, he's a Hall of Famer.
And
if
nobody
is a Hall of Famer, then Patrick Mahomes is a Hall of Famer right now.
And nobody out when Patrick Mahomes was coming out of Texas Tech, nobody was saying he's a winner, bro.
No,
like, give me a break.
No,
give me
a break. I love Pat. I'll be honest, Ryan. That's one I got right. I thought he was a dude, but it was never he's a winner.
Talented, right.
Exactly. He's a competitive kid. You could see that. Like, the competitive thing I actually buy more than the winner thing. That actually is kind of important to me. The only issue is like, okay, but you're saying that without any context. It's like when kids go to all-star games or camps and you move a kid up in the rankings because you deal with camp. But you're not moving him above kids. If you want to move him above kids that were also at the camp, fine. But you're not.
I know I keep saying the bro thing, but I don't know if I ever told you this story. So when I was in Indianapolis, I was out at one night and I saw a former player, a high level college, right? That's an agent now. And we were having that conversation. He was like, dude, and this is how he talks. He's like, dude, JJ McCarthy, my guy's the truth. And I was like, what about him's the truth? Like, what do you like? He's like, he's a winner, bro. He's a winner. All he does is win. I'm like, oh my God. So I need Stetson to walk Bennett. Away from this. Like, it just
Who was a bigger winner, Stetson Bennett or J.J. McCarthy?
You know who won a lot of games too? Ken Dorsey. Doesn't make him a good NFL right. quarterback. I'm sorry.
And again, we're not comparing him to those players.
No, right? I just said I would take J.J. in day two.
And Antoine made a comment. He said, anytime you're in a system when you got to constantly keep asking your quarterback to be great is a stupid system. But that's not what we're talking about.
No.
We're not penalizing J.J. We're simply saying you're overrating something and putting something on him that you should not necessarily be putting on him.
Right.
And that's the point. To say he's a winner – this is my point. To say he's a winner, I'm fine with that because he was pretty good at IMG, won a lot of games at IMG, won a lot of games at Nazareth Academy. This mm-hmm. isn't so much to say I don't think he's a winner. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is you're comparing him based on the team he played on more so yeah. than Drake May, because I would argue you take Drake May off of North Carolina the last 2 years. They're not a bowl team mm-hmm. these last two seasons, in my opinion. They're not. Right. You know, you take Caleb Williams off of Louisville and have Miller Moss be their quarterback all year, they're probably not a bowl team. They're right. definitely not an 11-win team 2 years ago. You know, you take yeah. Jaden Daniels off of LSU. LSU might have the same record. Mm-hmm. I doubt it. I think this
I doubt
year,
it. I doubt it.
2 years ago, they probably had the same record. Mm-hmm. This year, absolutely not, because I don't think they beat Missouri. If anyone other than Jaden Daniels, their quarterback, he literally put that team on his shoulders and, like, with his running ability, was just making some crazy plays. You know, I think they get blown out by Ole Miss, and mm-hmm. I like Nussmeier. He's a good quarterback, but Jaden Daniels had to do some Superman stuff this year for LSU win football games.
Yeah,
and JJ was never put in that situation. Now, if you're smart, you'd rather have Jaden Daniels in a JJ McCarthy type of situation. My point is not to argue whether the rightness or the wrongness of what Michigan did. I actually think Michigan was in a great place where they didn't have to ask him to go carry the team week in and week out. But yeah. if the conversation's about who's a winner and who's not, I think that's a really – like, if that's all you got, like, to me, I want to hear you talk about, here's what do I like about J.J. McCarthy. He's got a big arm, right? His ball placement has steadily improved the last 2 years. He's a pretty mobile kid. He's stronger than he looks because he looks a little on the thin side. But when you watch him as a runner, he's strong. His progressions have improved. Like, talk to me about that stuff, right? Well, I mean, that's going to determine if he's going to be successful in the NFL, right? Ryan, I mean, that's the stuff that matters to me, not he's a winner.
Well, you know? I mean, it's a resume thing for me ultimately, right? Like, a resume, winning is a part of the resume, but there's a bunch of physical traits. There's a bunch of intangibles that are a part of that conversation. And nobody ever wants to talk to me about JJ's skill set. They just want to talk about 27-1.
Which I think is unfortunate for JJ, because he does have some physical talent that I like.
I think he's pretty talented. Yeah.
You know, and honestly, I feel like the system has hurt JJ, because mm-hmm. if the system wasn't what it is today, where mm-hmm. a kid like JJ has no business being a top 10 pick, he's going back to Michigan.
Yeah.
And developing more. And then maybe next year he's in a legitimate chance to be a top 10 pick, where he's more yeah. ready to be that guy. Mm-hmm. So this actually hurts JJ, right? And it hurts JJ in that someone's going to overdraft him. And if he doesn't be further along than you and I think he will be, then all of a right. sudden, he was a bust. He was this, he was that. And that's not good for him either, Ryan.
Right.
That's my point.
And I love Antoine in the chat, but I disagree just so much with winner is doing anything necessary. Antoine, I watched a game against a pretty good Penn State team where it was a one-score game, and they were like, you know what we need to do to win? Not put the ball in J.J. McCarthy's hands for an entire half. An entire half. Don't give me the do whatever's necessary. They didn't ask him to do anything. They didn't ask him to do anything in that football game. So don't give me the necessary thing, man. Stop. He's talented. There's no right. doubt. He has exactly. requisite size. He's a good athlete. He has a pretty strong arm. He has upside, which is why I would take him probably in the top 64 picks. I just wouldn't draft him top 10. He's not ready for right. that. It's just not right. It's not ready.
If you want to have that conversation with me a year from now, then maybe. But again, that's why I think the system has hurt JJ. Yeah. Because he is being thrust into this draft as a true junior when, in fact, in past eras, there's no way he comes out after his junior year. No yeah. way. But here's my question. What quarterback in this draft class, including Bo Nix and Michael Penix, would have not also won all the games that they won this year with J.J. McCarthy? Well, like, do you think Michigan wins less games with Caleb Williams? Do you think they win less with Drake May or Jaden Daniels?
So my one buddy does a lot of charting for the NFL draft. He had a charted thing where on target percentage down the field, Spencer Rattler was at 67% down the field, not completion percentage, just on target percentage. And JJ McCarthy was only 38%. And I don't necessarily agree with my buddy on this, but he came to me and he was like, dude, I think that Michigan wins a national championship with Spencer Rattler, and South Carolina is probably worse with JJ McCarthy. I'm like, oh,
now that's taking it way too far. Like, that's taking it way too far. Like, I actually think JJ's really talented. I just think he's being thrust into a situation that he's just not there yet for. He could be there in a year. Sure. I believe that.
You know what it's like, though?
And I would take him every freaking day of the week over Spencer Rattler.
Spencer was pretty every good this year, man. He was pretty good, though, this year. He was pretty good in a bad situation. That offensive line was awful. Absolutely terrible.
He's the opposite of a winner, in my opinion.
Have you ever seen the Family Guy episode where they're talking about in the box? So they're like, so you could either have a boat or you could have a mystery box that could be a bunch of different outcomes, right? And the guy's like, oh, I want the mystery box because it could be anything, even a boat. And we're doing that with JJ McCarthy right now. It's like what we think. He could be anything he wants, or he might just be Drake May, right? And who Drake May is right now, that might just be what he is. And it's just, I don't know. Whatever.
No,
we're talking too much about Michigan quarterbacks.
We're talking draft. Antoine did say one thing. You know, they like him. You know, a big reason why they picked JJ because he runs an NFL system. Well, to a degree, there's some truth to that. But again, he's not running it the way that they're going to ask him to run in the NFL. I mean, last year he had games where he threw 13, 21, 16, 20, 17, and 8 passes. And he went 10 of 18 in the national championship game for 140 yards, right? Like, you're not winning the Super Bowl if your first-round pick at quarterback goes 10 of 18 for 140 yards in the title game. That's the point. So, again, I think JJ could eventually get there, but he's
a couple years away. Away if he gets
Somebody there. Said, I like Spencer Rattler. He's a good coach away from being great. Didn't he play for Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma? I mean, come on, guys. Come on now. All right, let's get off the J.J. McCarthy conversation. A lot of people are like, oh, thank God.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Coleman set expectations for Aeneas Williams this year. Personally, I think Kedren being the second to commit has gotten a lot of buzz. People often forget the production Aeneas put up as well. I mean, he put up great production. I think the big thing with Aeneas has always been, at least from projecting from high school to college, is that he played against some very poor competition in Missouri, right? Which is why he had such great competition. I think Aeneas is going to be a good player for Notre Dame. I don't know if it'll be in 2024, but I think he brings a really nice all-around skill set where he can
catch the football,
he can block.
Could it be 24, Ryan? Yeah. Mm-hmm. If they need Aeneas to play this year, you can play. I guess here's a little bit where I'd push back on it. I can't speak for other people. I can only speak for myself and Ryan to a degree, in that I know Ryan and I know what we've had these conversations. So I only speak for you based on conversations we've had before. Mm-hmm. And Kedren Young is not getting buzzed because he was the second to commit. Kedren Young is getting buzzed because he's a better running back, in my opinion.
More talented, yeah.
If he would have committed first and Aeneas second, I'd have had the same exact opinion I have, which is that's a heck of a running back class. I don't know if I'd trade this for anybody else's running back class. And so, yeah, he put up insane production in high school. We didn't forget about that. We praised Aeneas all the time. He's a good football player. And we've said in the past, if someday Aeneas Williams is starting running back, I've said he's a more athletic Kyren Williams. That's pretty flipping good.
Who just made a Pro Bowl in the NFL.
It's pretty good. So, yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not so much that we think anything negative about Aeneas. It's Ryan, I think we both had him as a top 150 graded kid, like mm-hmm. in that one. He's a heck of a football player, but Kedren is just better, in my opinion. Now, I will say this: we've also said Aeneas is the better all around back from what we've seen in high school, And yep. even though Kedren catches the ball better, you saw it in the Army game run. I've seen it in spring practices. He catches mm-hmm. the ball better than I thought. Well, just because we didn't know. We didn't throw him the ball. But he's still not an E.S. Williams as a pass catcher.
Sure.
And so, but that's what I love about that 1-2 punch, right? Is because they're not cookie cutters. They're, you know, we talk a lot about Jadarian Price and Jeremiah Love and the complementary skill set they have, but the fact is both could be the number one. Well, that's also why I, you know, you can tell them if you agree or not with me, Ryan, but the reason I love the 1-2 punch of Young and Williams is not because they're both really talented. That's part of it, but it's mm-hmm. they complement each other so well. And I think that actually makes them a better duo than if they were, you know, I would rather have Kedren and Aeneas than two Kedrens.
Sure.
Is the way that I look at it. And I think that's what makes it dynamic. Like a lot of things we're talking about with Jeremiah and Jadarian this year, in two years, we may be talking about that with Aeneas and Kedren.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes me love that group. But I don't think anybody at IB, and including people in the chat, have forgot at all about Aeneas Williams.
I love Aeneas Williams.
Yeah. So he's really good. Yeah, heck of a player. I mean, Ryan, I mean, this is one of the best offensive classes Notre Dame has signed in a long time.
If Aeneas Williams is your number one running back every single recruiting cycle, you're good.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like,
freaking good. You're good. Yeah,
you don't. Yeah, I mean, if you do better, that's awesome. But like, he's very good. So.
You're talking about a signing class, though. You've got C.J. Carr, Kedren Young, Aeneas Williams, Cam Williams, Micah Gilbert, Logan Saldate, Jack Larson, Gerby Lambert, Stiles Prescott, Peter Jones, and Anthony Knapp. That is one of the best signing classes that Notre Dame's had in a long time on offense. A long time. Mm-hmm. And it's exciting. And the reality is, though, is when it's that good, then some people are going to feel like we didn't talk enough about certain players. I think Micah Gilbert's a guy that I've heard people say, you guys didn't talk enough about him. And I'm like, we talked about him a lot. It's just, you know, Cam's going to get a little bit more of that oxygen because he's even better. But are we surprised that Micah Gilbert's is, you know, looking good as a freshman? No. Am I a little surprised he's looked as good as he has? A little bit. Like, he looks more like where I thought he'd be a year from now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you and I have said this about Jordan Faison. Am I surprised that at some point in time in his career, Jordan Faison had 19 catches for 300-some yards and 4 touchdowns? Not at all. Not at all. Am I surprised he did it as a freshman? Yeah, very much so. Very much so. But the talent was always there. Same with Micah. Talent's right. always there. If Aeneas Williams doesn't play a meaningful down this year, doesn't change what you're saying about him at all, Coleman. I'm still excited about him. Mm-hmm. You know, it just opportunity sometimes is just it is what it is because he's playing in a loaded backfield. But I'll tell you this right now, when Kedren and Jabron Payne were out, running back room didn't miss a beat. I'll tell you that right now. And just think about where we were in 19, where it was Tony Jones and the depth chart was, I hope Tony Jones doesn't get hurt. That was the depth chart in 2019. You know what I mean? To now it's like, you know, Tony maybe be third. I mean, probably be third on this group. You know, in my opinion. So,
yeah,
they've done a great job building this room up. Huge, huge props to Dylan McCullough for that, too. Lance Taylor got it started with Jadarian, but Coach McCullough kept him in the class and has really built on it in impressive fashion. Really, really impressive fashion.
We had Bull Peen Shalele who says, what college campus besides Notre Dame do you enjoy visiting the most, if any? I haven't been at enough college campuses, to be honest. So,
University of Virginia has a gorgeous campus. For me, it's aesthetics, Ryan. It's what campuses, yeah, start. Yeah. Just especially when you drive near their campus in the fall, because mm-hmm. the mountains that are out in Western Virginia mm-hmm. are the tree-covered ones. And so when I drive home to see my family like October, November, and the mountains are just red and yellow and orange, it is a beautiful sight, man. And the campus of Virginia is a lot. I mean, you're driving through that to get there. It's a gorgeous campus. Chapel Hill, North Carolina, Chapel Hill has got a really pretty campus. I love their campus as well. I have not actually been on Clemson's campus. I've only been on their stadium, which is like kind of on like the outskirts of the campus. Stanford has a really nice looking campus too. If you can get out, if you can remind yourself or stop yourself from reminding yourself that you're in California, then yes, but Stanford, in all seriousness, Stanford's got a real pretty campus as well. I like their campus. Georgia's is pretty nice. They have a nice campus. I enjoyed that one as well. Do not like Michigan State's campus. Michigan's campus is just kind of Purdue's campus is okay. It's an okay campus, but yeah, those are the ones that I've been to, Ryan, that I probably like the most. And of the Carolina ones, I think probably Wake might be my number two. I like their campus better than NC State and Duke. Duke's a little bit city, you know, it's kind of in Durham, right there in Durham, you know, and NC State's campus is nice. I actually camped there. They recruited me a little bit as a junior, and so I did a camp there. It's not bad. Wake's got a really pretty campus, in my opinion, and so does Chapel Hill. Very, very pretty campus.
Chapel Hill.
All right, here's one, Ryan, the question I wanted to ask. Where is it? All right. I just saw it. It was a good one. Give me a second. It was one from Coleman. Okay, here's one that I wanted to address. Here we go.
Coleman says, with how you said Mike Denbrock only likes to use tight ends sparingly compared to wideouts, will we ever see Michael Mayer production from a tight end under Mike Denbrock?
I definitely did not say that. In fact, I've pointed out years where the production at tight end was very good under Mike Denbrock. What I have said was there have been times when he's used the tight end position sparingly because that's what the depth chart dictated. So I would push back strongly against the notion that I have said that he sparingly uses the tight end. That's not accurate at all. I've definitely never said that, and I don't believe that to be the case. This past season, for example, his tight end had 36 catches. He was banged up all year. 2022, he had a true freshman tight end that had 38 catches for 414 yards. So in 2021, his tight ends at Cincinnati combined for over 50 catches and 600 yards. I'm going to pull it up right now and give you the exact numbers. But his tight ends combined for 54, his top two tight ends combined for 54 catches for 600 yards and 10 touchdowns. What I have said was, is he's not going to force the issue. He's not going to throw to the tight end a bunch just cause. And so if there are years where, you know, your receiving core is loaded and your tight end is not, like I've used Notre Dame 15 as an example. You really only had one healthy tight end that could catch the ball. That was Alize Mack, who was a true freshman. Thurm Smythe got hurt. Your other tight ends were like, Tyler Luatua, Nick Wisher, you know, guys like that. You're just not going to throw the tight end as much. And when you've got Will Fuller and Chris Brown and Amir Carlisle and CJ Procise, you're just not going to throw it to true freshman Alize Mack a ton. However, there were some big moments where Alize got the ball. If you go back and watch the game-winning touchdown drive against Temple, Will Fuller caught the game winner, but it was a corner route on a smash concept to Alize Mack that got that drive going. And so they'll certainly do it. But if they have a Michael Mayer type or a Tyler Eifert type or a Cole Kmet type, then you will see that type of production. You will. What I love about Coach Denbrock, and here's really the point that you need to take out of this, Coleman, is he's going to play to his talent. And if that means the talent is big-time tight ends and a lot of 12 personnel, he'll do it. He did that at Cincinnati, and he did that at Cincinnati with a roster that had three receivers that got drafted in the fourth round or higher and also had Michael Young. So he'll mix it up. But if it's like, hey, I'll say this, and I'm curious when Ryan gets back, I want to get his opinion on this because he studied Mike Denbrock as well. But I would say this, if Mike Denbrock was the offensive coordinator for Notre Dame in 2022, we would have seen a ton of 12 personnel, a ton of it, because he didn't have the receivers or the quarterback to do a lot of 11 personnel. Now, do I think we would have seen as much 12 and 13 personnel as we did under Tommy Rees? I do not. But would it have been comparable? Absolutely, because that's what was needed. A big reason why Tommy Rees ran so much 12 and 13 personnel in 21 and especially in 2022, because they didn't run it as much in 2021, but the reason we saw so much of it in 2022 is because that made sense. The tight end position room in 2022 was better than the receiver room in 2022. So that was kind of my point, Ryan, is I said, look, if Denbrock was the OC in 22, we'd have seen Notre Dame run a ton of 12 personnel that season because he's going to play to his strengths, and that's right. The point. You remember studying Cincinnati's roster in 2020 and 2021. He had two tight ends that were focal points of his offense that year, even with NFL receivers at other spots. And that's one of the things I love about him as a coordinator is the fact that he is not going to – we're 11 personnel 90% of the time, and that's who we are. I know I got three All-American tight ends and three NFL draft picks as tight ends, but we're 11 personnel. No, he's not going to do that. Unless his 11 personnel is Golden Tate, Will Fuller, and Michael Floyd, you know, then he might. You know what I mean? But that's one of the things I absolutely love about Mike Denbrock as a coach.
Yeah. I mean, he's always shown the play to his strengths, right? If they're a running football team, they're a running football team. If they're a passing football team, they're a passing football team. If they're 11 personnel, if they're 12 personnel. I'm not worried about Mike Denbrock making a bad decision as far as how to utilize his skill position talent. So I'm very excited about what he's going to do this year.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt about it.
All right, so we had another one from Ida Benami. Says, I wish I got to read Loose Emoji's articles and know about the legend Loose Emoji. The day he passed, I went to Mustard's Last Stand in Evanston in honor of him, one of his favorite spots. Best story of Lou.
Oh, there's – well, the one that shows his true character, in my opinion, is when I worked with – I had been with BGI for maybe a year. And Lou loves dogs. He knows that I love dogs. And our dog Brady died of cancer. And Lou actually cried with me and sent me an Angela card and a gift and about Brady. And it just kind of showed the heart he has. Like, he just was such a good and decent man. He cared for people, you know, like whenever someone would come up and recognize him at a game, right, he would be so shocked. Like, how does that person know who I am? Why would that person take time out of their day to come say hi to me? Because he just didn't understand who he was. Like, everybody knew Lou was a legend except for one person, Lou. You know what I mean? And, you know, we still had a land run. I stopped working at BGI in 2019. It wasn't that long ago. We still had a landline phone in the office that had the number that they had forever. And when these customers would call and just want to talk Notre Dame football, he would sit on the phone with them, knowing he had hours of work to do, and talk to them. And that's just the kind of guy he was. But my favorite stories are ones that involve, like, as far as working with him, are ones that involve how much easier he made my life because I had to do no research. Hey, Lou, when was the last time Notre Dame landed a kid from so-and-so? Cool, thanks. Got it. You know what I mean? It was fun. And then I always knew how to get Lou. Lou was a guy that when he was there, he was working. But I always knew how to get Lou to stop working. And the easiest way to get him to stop working was to talk about the 1973 Sugar Bowl between Notre Dame and Alabama. I think it was the 72 Sugar Bowl to Notre Dame and Alabama. This is Lou's favorite game ever. And he would get so excited because Lou was very monotone. He would get so excited. He'd say, come over here. And he'd have me come over. He'd pull up the YouTube. He'd start talking to me. Now, what you got to remember about this play is, you know, and it was so great because, like, Lou was just such a hard worker and a good man and just really loved Notre Dame. I mean, his mom worked at Notre Dame in the cafeteria. You know, he had a great story. He had to go to Holy Cross for 2 years before he got into Notre Dame and took care of his family, took care of his mom until she passed. And I remember one time, Ryan, I was sitting in the office and his phone rings, his cell phone. He picks it up and starts walking out. He starts talking. And I'm like, is Lou having a stroke? Like, what is going on? He was speaking Hungarian because that's what his mom spoke. He goes to Hungary and he would start speaking Hungarian to someone about his mom. And he's walking out. And I'm like, I thought for a second there that he was having a stroke or he was speaking in tongues or something. I didn't know what was going on. But he just was truly one of the most decent. And I think that's the thing at the end of the day you want to be known for is, yeah, it's good that he was a great writer. But anyone that knows Lou, you can talk to Tim Priester about this. You can talk to Pete Sampson about this. Talk to Tim O'Malley. Anyone that's ever worked with Lou any period of time, they'll tell you the first thing that you think about Lou is he's just the nicest man you'll ever meet in your life. And if you're going to be remembered for something, isn't that what you'd rather be known for? Like, Ryan, would you rather be known when you pass away? Would you rather be known for how smart you were in the NFL draft stuff? Or would you rather be known for he was a really good dad?
The NFL draft stuff. I'm just kidding.
You're a liar. Yeah. You are a liar. You know, now it's good that you can be both, but like, if you were good at that, but you were an absentee father and all this, it's like, was it worth it to you? You know, right. And at the end of the day, that's who Lou was. He was he truly cared about people, and he truly put, you know, not only say, and I wouldn't even pride, but he really valued, you know, what kind of impact he made on people's lives. He's a great mentor to people. And, you know, I do miss him constantly. Angie and I were just talking about him the other day, and just the kindest man you'll ever meet in your life. And if any of you that don't know, have never read his stuff, there's still articles online about it. You know, he did a top 10 all time Notre Dame recruiting classes, series of articles that are just phenomenal. You know, where he's breaking down the 1946 class and, you know, all this other kind of stuff. And I think it was the 46 class that never lost a game. It was a recruiting class that never lost a game in college. They tied a couple, but never lost a game in college. It's just nuts, man. So he was truly an amazing guy. And on top of being just the smartest. I mean, people are like, oh, you really know? I'm like, dude, I couldn't hold a candle to Lou when it comes to knowledge of Notre Dame football and stuff like that. It just, he was a true joy to. Did you ever get a chance to meet him, Ryan?
No.
Yeah. Nope. Yeah. I always feel bad for anyone that never got a chance to meet him. He was an awesome
I used to listen to your guys' podcast though all the time. Yeah. So
Very different personalities. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, do you have any regrets from working with Lou? And I said, the only regret I have is that, you know, I'm a very talkative guy, and you know me, I have to mute myself sometimes to not get, you know, because I just, it's conversation for me. It's just back and forth. But mm-hmm. Lou was so giving that he would just kind of, okay, let you go on your rant. There was no fighting for that oxygen because he's just too nice, right, man. So if I could go back, I'd say, I wish I was a little bit more willing to use our time to pull more out of him,
mm-hmm.
than to always have to dominate the conversation. That would be the one regret that I have, because my demanding, like with you, it's better because like you also have that kind of personality like me. So you'll fight for that oxygen and fight for that air and go and do all those type of things. And that's good.
Mm-hmm.
But like with Lou, it's like, it would get to the point where I would just basically be dominating the conversation.
I got you.
If I was a better host, then I would have done more to, you know, hey, pull more out of Lou, or maybe done some subject matters more often that were more up his wheelhouse, where he would kind of be the star of the show more often. That's right. The one professional regret that I have. I still think we did a lot of great shows together, but I think we could have done even better shows because I was still kind of new to the podcast thing. The first time I ever hosted a podcast was the ones I did with him, you know, so like I'd never hosted one before. And so it was the learning process. And so say, if I'm looking back, that would be the one thing I wish I would have been able to do is that.